introduce myself. I'm Dorcas Gingrich from Minerva, Ohio. We are my husband pastors. He is actually the bishop of the church, and he pastors a small church in Minerva. We have five children, and we have two sons, Patrick and Preston, and three daughters, Emily, Abigail, and Cecilia. I come to you knowing that there's so much wisdom out here in sitting in the audience. What I'm going to say is nothing new, but I have found for myself that it is such a blessing to have my own life inspired and just to be able to reflect on what I'm going through and just have new ideas come my way, even if they're not new, just to inspire me to a deeper walk with God. My title is Making My Husband Known in the Gates. And before I start, I'm going to give you three questions to think about. Does our marriage really affect our husband's ministry? What is the key component to building transformed marriages? And then how can I encourage my pastor husband? And I know I heard this through this week. They said you should not give a little disclaimer, but truly, please don't think of me as someone who has attained. I had to think of the monarch butterfly as they go from the little worm to the chrysalis and to the hatching. I feel like I'm still in that metamorphosis. I'm still being changed into the woman, the helpmeet that my husband needs. As I begin, I have a story for you. The story is told of the First Lady Barbara Bush. She and her former President George Bush were driving through their home state of Texas. Their limo stopped at a filling station, and the gas attendant came to the car, and Mrs. Bush recognized him. And she said, "Oh, I dated him back in high school." And President Bush looked at her and goes, "Aren't you glad you didn't marry him?" And she goes, "Oh, but if I would have married him, he would have been the president." Now, I don't know if that story is true, but that lady was very aware how her life impacted and influenced her husband. Have you ever stopped and really considered how your life as a minister's wife, your character, will influence those around you? Not just your family, but the church, your home, your community. I looked up the definition of influence, and it's like saying this: you are holding the power of causing an effect in an indirect or intangible ways. No, you aren't ordained, but we do have a calling. A calling to support and minister to our husband and to our ministry. So that brings us to the fact of, well, what's the pastor's wife supposed to be? What exactly is her role? That's what I did. I felt very inadequate when Joel was ordained. But because as a child, I remember, as a layperson, looking at the ministry and the bishop's wife, and now I'm in those shoes, and just taking it for granted, well, their families, their lives, they just have it all together. Well, overnight, suddenly I went from being Joel's wife to being a pastor's wife. Suddenly, I realized how human we are. So we're following our husband's new calling, and we still find ourselves as broken, needy women who still have needs of the heart. So as I was meditating in preparing this talk, I was trying to combine, okay, they want transformed marriages, and they want to know how to make your husband known in the gates. So in meditating on those, God showed me that in order for my husband to be known in the gates, I will be the most effective and influential to my husband's ministry if I am, first of all, the helpmeet my husband needs in his marriage. I asked our veteran deacon's wife a question. I said, how important do you think, or how do you think our marriages affect our husband's ministry? Do they affect him? And she said, absolutely. And she said, you shouldn't just love him, you should like him. So, as we look at marriage, God created male and female to complete the image of God. And he created them to have this beautiful, intimate relationship called marriage. And he knew our differences would cause friction, but he also knew the differences could be used to complement each other. I've been made very much aware in the short time that Joel has been ordained that Satan would like nothing better than to see the marriages of our spiritual leaders to fail. Our churches are no stronger than our homes, and our homes are no stronger than our marriages. Your husband might be the bishop, the deacon, or the minister of a church, but he still carries that deep need for a helpmeet, a wife who is willing to go into the trenches with him, willing to sacrifice her time, her interests, for the needs of her husband and his calling. And not only do our families need to see that, our churches need to see a wife that's willing to sacrifice for her husband and to see where love is evident. Now, I had a humorous little thing. My family knows, of course, that we've been studying for this. And she was like, and actually she's dating, so of course she takes in a lot. She was like, so why does it seem like after you've been married for a long time, they just don't act in love? And Joel and I just chuckled because we know, I mean, it's not always just out in the open, yet that love grows deeper. But it really struck a chord in my heart. I was like, our children love to see that, the husband and the wife expressing that love to each other. It may only be a hug and a kiss, and they might roll their eyes and say, oh, Dad. But they really do like to see that. The title for this session came from Proverbs 31:23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. How do you think this man became one of those that sat as an elder in the gates? The gates were the prominent place where disputes were settled and the wise men sat. But in the Old Testament, these weren't just people of old age, but they were of social distinction. And they held positions of leadership in the city, helping to make decisions for the city and also to help settle disputes. In the early church, you find the same term, elder, and that was often synonymous with a pastor or as a church leader. So if you would have lived in the old times, likely, maybe your husband would have sat in those gates. But I think that has just a whole deeper meaning than just to see how will my influence make my husband popular and well-known. I know when Joel was first ordained, I was like, well, that'd just be kind of neat, you know. Everybody wants my husband at their church for meetings. But it has a way deeper meaning. I think it's rather, how is he known in his gates? How is he known in his family, or his marriage, or his church? What can I do as a helper to promote that? I've read Proverbs 31 many times in preparing for this, and we really often focus on the great physical things that this woman did. And we just sigh and feel so overwhelmed, and it's like, that's not me. But in reading it, I became so challenged how many of these have spiritual qualities for a minister's wife. And this was also a woman who just showed a lot of respect for her husband. This respect just encircled him like a crown. So right now, I'm just going to focus a little bit on marriage before I go into the practical aspects. I had to think, there's so many ways we could go in this. Marriage, there's so many things that are important. There's communication, there's submission, there's forgiveness. But what I'd like to focus on a little bit is respect. Joel and I have attended 3 marriage seminars in the past year. And lest you think our marriage is pretty needy, I'll explain why. We attended one for ourselves, for our own benefit, an inspiration about a year ago, and then we were able to help with 2 marriage seminars in the last couple months. And it certainly doesn't take you long to see that there are many, many needy marriages out there, many hurting couples. And I just want this to be not like I'm pointing fingers at you, like saying, I really think you guys need to support your husbands better, but to be better equip you that you guys, you ladies, can be a better channel to your own women in your churches. Because if we're honest with ourselves, marriage really takes a lot of work. And then we add these extra responsibilities, and it takes extra effort to keep our marriages strong. Let's take a step back in time and recall some of the key ingredients we were taught that contribute to marriage, a strong marriage, especially for a woman. And some of the first things I thought of, one of the first things, was submission. But in all my settings for these marriage seminars, I was struck with, I think there's something that comes before submission, and that is respect. Over the years, I've heard many messages on submission, but I couldn't really recall many messages on how a woman should respect her husband. You'll understand more when I keep going. Now, I strongly believe in submission, don't get me wrong, but often submission can be an outward form of obedience. But inside, we're still standing up. So what's the difference? Submission is surrendering our will to the will of another. Respect is holding in high regard and esteem, or adoring, your husband. They're so closely tied together. Submission is obeying, but respect is wanting to obey. Because I hold my husband in high regard and esteem, and he will feel that difference. Now, men have this deep desire to be respected, and it is proven that men would rather be respected than loved. We as ladies love to be loved, and so we tend to give what we like. But do you know how men spell love? R. E-S-P-E-C-T, respect. Now, I always thought Joel and I had a good marriage. It wasn't without its bumps and its things to work through. But in all my studies of respect, it has, I have tried to put it into better action. It has just taken our marriage to a new level of love. It has been so rewarding. So if you feel like your emotional needs aren't being met by your husband, or your love tank isn't being filled as you wish, ask yourself if your husband is feeling respect from you. And we talk about a man's ego, and we even joke about it. But the man's ego and the respect he needs are very closely tied together, especially if your husband's love language is words of affirmation. My husband told me, he said, if you want a motivated man, show him respect. Joel and I have been very inspired by the book Love and Respect by Dr. Emerson Eggerich, and I would encourage all of you, who all have read that book? Oh, wonderful. So you know what I'm talking about. He gives that wonderful concept of how your respect motivates his love, and his love motivates her respect. And that could be a whole subject in itself, but it has just been reaffirming to me how important respect is and how it motivates your husband. Respect comes in different forms, and it can be shown in action, which is where submission comes in. But I want to focus a little bit more on vocalizing our respect. You know, we tell them we love him, but have you ever told him what you respect about him? I encourage you tonight, step out of your comfort zone if you're not used to doing this, and just tell him what you respect about him. I respect the way you lead out in the home. I respect the stand you take for your convictions. I admire the way you reach out to the less noticed members in your church. Or I appreciate your ability to speak the truth in such a simple and clear way. It's focusing on the strengths and abilities your husband possesses. We recently, at one of the marriage seminars we were at, one of the speakers had a talk on communication in marriage. And he challenged us to the post-it note challenge. He gave each couple one of these, with instructions that each day, each of us write a little note to our spouse. It could be a love note, encouragement, a Bible verse, admiration, it could be anything. It has been such a fun tool for Joel and I to use to show our love to each other. And then I like to use it to tell him what I respect about him. And then to put him in places where you think they might find him. Sometimes you hide him too hard and you have to give it to him. But yeah, that's been a really fun idea for me. So let's take this thought into the practical realm of our ministry. Husband's ministry. I was, like I said before, the Proverbs 31 woman has a lot of input how we as ministers' wives can impact our husbands and how they can bless them. And as I go into this, I will say I have been so blessed to have many friends here, and some have given input into my life and given me ideas. So not all of these ideas are mine, but it gives you a broader spectrum of ideas. Okay, Proverbs 31, verses 10 and 11 talks about this. Slips my mind. A virtuous woman. And how she was there for her husband. She embraced the call. Let's see if this rings a bell. Can you accept your husband's calling as of the Lord? Will you promise to support your husband? Do you remember hearing that at your husband's ordination? That is the commitment we made at the time of our husband's ordination. We feel unworthy, we feel unqualified, and just scared, to be plain honest. Because we know this is not just a temporary office like being a Sunday school teacher, but it's for life. I'm sure we have all struggled at times to embrace our husband's calling. Sometimes we feel like our 9-year-old son at the time did, at the time of Joel's first ordination. My sister had taken the children home while we went through the, met all the people. And we walk in the door, and the first thing he says was, "Why didn't you pick up the other book?" We struggle with these fears of this new calling, the tension that you know is inevitable between church and family. And we fear the responsibilities. Counseling someone in revival meetings? Approaching someone with a concern? Me? Those were some of my worries. God had to take me through a fearful, traumatic pregnancy to bring me face to face with my fears. At the time of the ordination, hope I can say this without breaking down. At the time of Joel's ordination, I was 6 months pregnant, 6 weeks pregnant. It wasn't long I saw I was having much trouble. At 9 weeks pregnant, I hemorrhaged so badly that they gave me 2 units of blood. And the baby was not lost. It was a miracle. I was on bed rest for a little bit, then the doctor thought that that the placenta had moved up because it was over a scar tissue of a former C-section. And so I was back on my feet again. At 19 weeks, the doctor told me he sees some things. He sees pockets of blood in there that if they rupture, it will cause a big bleed. He warned me that it's going to be a very, it could be a very difficult pregnancy. I was placenta previa at that point. That night, I hemorrhaged again. That time, we knew what to do. They didn't need to give me blood. But I was put on bed rest for 4 months. I've never experienced such fear. Looking into the face of death and realizing I could die. I have 4 children. God had my attention. Suddenly those fears that I had of talking with someone at a revival meeting looked so trivial. I remember praying, "God, if you can just get me through this, I will just do anything for you." As painful as that refining experience was, I thank God for helping me to face my fears and to see, and just to embrace God's Joel's ministry and what God had for me. When I was supposed to be the giver, I was the receiver. I wanted to be the giver, but it was like God had to teach me to learn how to receive so that I can give in return. Was this an overnight change of just teaching me? I just really took everything in, accepted everything? No. But it helped me change my attitude. Our attitudes will so affect our outlook on life. It's so easy to have that, "Well, what about me? You know, I have needs too." We need to look at disappointments as His appointments. And just to you newly the wives who are of newly ordained men, don't fight that call. Live with joy and obey God's call with thankfulness. Just let God use you as that channel of love, first to your husband and then to those around you. I love the verse in Luke 1 where Mary, the mother of Jesus, she just had this scary visit from the angel. Yet she was so submissive, and she said, "Behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto thee, unto me, according to thy word." That verse has blessed me, just her sweet submission. Our acceptance of our husband's call will also affect our children. If you have a struggling mom with attitudes, likely you'll have children who struggle with it as well. But what's so exciting is when we are at peace with it, we will also have peaceful children. And not only that, but your children can be used as such an effective tool in ministry. They touch lives in ways that we can't. So, to your young moms, involve your children and start when they're young. Some of the ideas that I have here include them. Take them along on visitation. What child doesn't enjoy being with their daddy for a couple hours? And it can be that quality time for that high-need, high-strung child just to be one-on-one with dad. When daddy studies, encourage your children to pray for him. They'll be feel included that they're helping dad study by praying. Allow them to bless dad with his favorite drinks and snacks. Encourage them to write notes to the older people. We have found that in our church, our older people love getting notes. Our daughter Abigail she just started writing notes to her, and this lady just loved it. It has started a relationship that is still going today. She will still bring gifts for Abigail, and it's just blessed me to see how our children can minister in ways that we can't. There's someone, one of our ministers' families, has five girls, and they have this little jar ministry. Every week, the two older girls, they pick a name out of the jar, and it's man or woman. It's everybody. The other week, in our church mailbox, I opened it up, and here was one for me. "Dorcas, have a nice day." Opened it, a little note to me, and a little tea bag, and a bookmark that fell. It was so special. And then this past Sunday, this was in our mailbox for Patrick. It's a candy bar. I mean, they love this. It creates a connection with your church people that will inspire them. They can touch those lives like we can't. For you ladies that have teenagers, encourage your children to help the young married couples. If they need work outside, allow your daughters to go help the moms. It helps these children to look beyond themselves and see the value of ministering to others. And when your children feel included in your ministry, they'll be more likely to accept their dad's call and be willing to release you to your ministry to others. One mom told me that when they receive gifts from people like cinnamon rolls or bread, she likes to say, "You know, you really wouldn't get this if your dad wasn't a minister." Be honest with your children. We wrestle with the amount of information to share. But we have had many teachable moments sharing certain specific details of struggles or happenings that are going on in the church or a person is facing. No, not as a general discussion at the supper table, but more of a personal conversation that will benefit and not put down. As one lady shared with me, keeping them updated on current issues in the church, or keep them updated before they hear it from somewhere else, it has been a real opportunity to build relationships for them. One family has a Saturday night surprise, and this is more for the younger moms. Every Saturday night, their dad has a little Saturday night surprise. It's a little gift, a snack, a quarter, but it gives them something to look forward to, especially if their dad's been studying all day long. The ministry of prayer. This is so important for us ladies. Verse 30 in Proverbs 31 says, "A woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised." This is the woman's crowning accomplishment. It was her fear of God, not the physical accomplishments. She had a personal relationship with her Lord. She desired to be fed with the Word of God. And I've heard that throughout the messages, and it's been just a confirmation to me again. Give yourself to God. Allow yourself time to read. And I know with small children, it's not always so easy. But it was still, even if in those busy times, such a blessing, even just to read some verses and keep meditating. Keep praying as you work. God realizes our circumstances. We really need our own hearts to be first fulfilled in Jesus, because life will happen. We have an exhausted husband at the day's end, still needing to give his attention to church matters. And where does our relationship fit in? Long evenings of your husband studying while the mom is once again trying to fill both roles, or maybe it's canceling a weekend trip because your husband needs to preach again. And it's so tempting to say, well, if only. But Jesus can feel the deepest needs of your heart. Spend time in prayer for your husband, for yourself, for your family, and for those struggling members in your church. I remember after our youngest was born, she was born a month early, and she had to be fed every 3 hours, day and night. And you sit there rocking and feeding, and you're desperately wishing for more sleep. And God showed me that is such a special time to pray. That dark, lonely room turned into a haven of prayer for me. Suddenly, I had uninterrupted time to pray, and it was a real blessing. If you're limited on time for meditation, write out Bible verses and post them on close to your refrigerator or on your kitchen window, even in the laundry room. The very act of reading God's word has a cleansing effect on our minds, and it will strengthen your faith. Your relationship with God will actually reflect the relationship with your husband. If your relationship with God is weak and mundane, how effective will even your prayer life be? Your husband needs that spiritually strong wife who will hold up his arms in prayer, because the ministry your husband is called to is a spiritual battlefield. Ephesians 6:12 says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Your pastor husband needs that spiritual protection of prayer surrounding him. Oswald Chambers says, "The very powers of darkness are paralyzed by fear." I love that. There is power in prayer. Have you ever noticed that when it's around a time, maybe your husband has a special assignment, that of the increase of spiritual warfare. We have noticed this in our own family. Satan hates truth. He hates to see our men on the front lines of the spiritual battles, proclaiming the gift of life and salvation. A couple weeks ago, Joel was preparing for revival meetings, and we both had this assignment laying heavy on our minds. One of our children was struggling, and I was feeling very discouraged and burdened. And it's like, why, God? Why does Satan attack our children? I think he knows where the weakest part of our heart, where we hold, that we hold so close. But God made me very aware that this is an attack from Satan. It was such a powerful moment. I'm like, this does not need to get me down. God is so much greater. I requested prayer. I called up some ladies, texted them, and I just asked them to pray for our children for spiritual protection over the next couple weeks. It was amazing. It was such a blessing. Don't be afraid to ask people to pray for you and your family. We feel vulnerable. We think, well, we're supposed to be the ones that, you know, these great spiritual warriors. We are weak and needy. And often our members are just so glad to know what they can do to help us. One of my friends stated that they often experience a rough spot in their marriage the week before her husband preaches. Identify those lies that Satan brings your way. Satan wants you to focus on your discouragements, and he wants you to take your mind off the spiritual needs you were praying for. Pray for his spiritual discernment. There are so many voices out there calling to bring confusion and disillusionment to his life. They really need the support of knowing his wife is praying for you. That you are praying for him. We've had it in our own family that different beliefs, and it can be so confusing. Pray for them. Pray for God's Holy Spirit to fill them, to direct him what subject he should preach on. Before Joel was ordained, I just took it for granted that preaching a message came easily. It doesn't always. I told Joel, I have a whole new appreciation for the time and effort they put in their messages. I said, women are not cut out to be preachers. Pray that they can be morally strong and pure. Once again, Satan would like nothing better to see our pastors fall into the sin of lust. We women appreciate when our emotional needs are met. Our men have physical needs that we wives can fulfill. Satisfy that need, especially when your husband leaves for a period of time. Pray that God would develop in your husband the gifts he needs to fulfill his calling. When we're young mothers, we wish we had a direction manual for to take care of these babies, how to discipline them, how to parent. Our men have these feelings of inadequacy as well. Be there to encourage him and speak your appreciation of his messages. It builds confidence. Don't criticize his preaching abilities. Maybe they're too long or too short. Maybe he repeats his thoughts too often. And it's easy for wives of the newly ordained to be self-conscious of it and compare your husband with the other husband or the other preacher and think, oh my, that's so embarrassing. Don't be ashamed. Build them up. The more you build them up, the more confidence they have. Sometimes in being self-conscious of the mistakes they make. Sometimes they'll come up with funny new phrases that make you kind of embarrassed and you laugh about. One time my husband said, a 3-4'd cold. Or one other minister said, God loveth a cheerful liver. Don't take it personally. Laugh together. Love and encourage them. Hold your head high and be grateful that your husband was counted worthy for the ministry. Another way I like to pray for my husband is when I iron. When I'm ironing his clothes, ironing his pants, I find that such a special time to pray for him, and it can be for any of the members of your family. And I'll briefly go over, well, fasting. I have found fasting to be very powerful as well. I liked what Alan Byler said. When we crucify the flesh, it creates an avenue that God can work through. Are we willing to exchange a few hours of restraint from a physical need for a few hours of a deeper communication with God? Fasting is when we see our utter helplessness and God sees our desperate desire. There have been times in my life when the burden on my heart has felt so heavy, and there just seemed to be no answer from God. And it was like God whispered, are you willing yet to fast for this? I've seen God move in powerful ways through fasting. For so long, I was just like, well, I can't fast because I tend to have low blood sugar, and when I go without food for a long time, I get headaches, I feel sick. And then I realized it's not so much not eating, but being willing to give up. So I have found it very beneficial for me. If I know I can't fast, maybe I can fast just till lunch, or maybe just eat what I have to throughout the day. That has been so freeing to me that I can fast in different ways, because God does know our limitations. The power of the tongue. I'm going to have to go through this quickly. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and we underestimate the power of our words. They can inspire, they can hurt and destroy. What we say in 10 seconds can affect a person for the next 10 years. Proverbs 21:23 says, whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. Our tongue is such a little member, but it can bring a lot of hurt and a breach of trust. We hear a lot of sensitive information. We counsel women and we hear their stories. We listen to our husbands unburden themselves of church situations. Carla Downing wrote, being armed with such knowledge can be a temptation in many ways. Maybe we like being on the cutting edge of telling other new news. Maybe you're upset about it and want to talk about it to someone. Or maybe you want to mediate and fix relationships between other people. She says also, it takes patience to wait until you talk about something, till you can talk about something without breaking a confidence. It takes strength to hold your own opinion without others agreeing with you. It takes strong character to resist the temptation to join in gossip and drama. And it takes healthy boundaries not to mediate and fix when it isn't any of your business. In 1 Timothy 3, Paul warned Timothy that bishops and deacons' wives should not be slanderers. So I looked up slanderer. And to be truthful, I was a little horrified. A slanderer, the definition is the utterance of false charges or misrepresentations which defame and damage another's reputation. And I was like, really? Ministers' wives would do that? Spread false stories? But then as I thought of it, I was like, maybe we're not so tempted in that, but maybe we're tempted to slant the story and not say all the details. Or it gives us a slant of just degrading and not And, you know, then everybody else can fill in the details, which might not be the right details. Terry Chapel, in her book, It's a Wonderful Life, states, we are a constant reflection of our husband and his calling. People are constantly forming their opinions of your husband, your family, and your God by the way they view you. There's another way of keeping confidences, and this is, can we keep our mouths shut? When we experience situations where the flesh wants to vocalize the unjustness or unfairness of someone else's blame. I heard a story a while back of a minister's wife. Her husband had told me the story. They were in council meeting, and a lady, a member in the church, stood up, sobbing and crying. And she said she confessed of having bitterness in her heart towards someone in the church that was spreading rumors about her and her family. And she wants to forgive them. So after church, this lady went up, the minister's wife went up to this lady to encourage her. And then she opened herself and she said, if there's ever been anything that I have said that hurts you, I'm sorry. And this lady started crying again, and she said, but it was you who was spreading the rumors. Your siblings were all talking about it. I forgive you, but I don't know if I can ever trust you again. The heart of this pastor's wife was deeply bruised, for she knew who the person was who had brought the knowledge into the community. Although she was completely innocent and had taken no part in circulating this account, she chose to remain silent and graciously accepted the unfounded accusation. Instead of declaring her innocence, she thanked the offended sister for her forgiveness rather than expose the guilty person and stir up deeper hurt. Years have passed, and this pastor's wife has graciously moved on in life with nothing but grace in her heart as she continues to minister to hurting souls. I just thought, what a beautiful character this woman had. She held her tongue when she had the power to defend herself and to hurt another. Would I be able to have the courage and strength to carry another's blame when I am innocent? She portrayed the image of Christ. Be an encourager. Proverbs 31:26 says, she openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. Words inspire, and they encourage. This time of the year, I love watching the tulips. You know, they're so closed, but give them sunshine, and they just open up. Our men are like that. So while I was preparing for this talk, I was like, okay, Joel, what are some ways that I can encourage you? And his first reply was, well, he would really think it'd be nice if I'd bring pizza to his desk while studying, coffee delivered, automatic refills without being asking for them. He thought that would be really good. And I enjoy giving him those snacks, too. They do enjoy those acts of kindness. And we've talked about our children being involved, but that's my time sometimes, too, to just take something in, encourage him, tell him I'm praying for him, and it's just our way of connecting. Verbally encourage. Your husband has studied hard and spent all day working on a message. My husband enjoys feedback. He likes hearing what blessed me, what convicted me, or if something wasn't clear. Joel had a brother at the ordination that came through, and that was one thing I'll never forget. He said, compliment your husband after he preaches the message. He said, my wife does that and it means so much. Affirm them after, like, ministers' meetings, difficult assignments, men's meeting. Reaffirm them. They need to hear that. They want to hear, how did I sound? Those critical, sarcastic words can tear down a man's confidence. We can destroy our husband by our words, or we can build them up. You might think it's not easy for me to vocalize. That's not how I grew up. Or why should they receive all the praise when I do all my things without much appreciation? Not only will your marriage thrive on those kind words, your husband will blossom. I've just been aware, too, of how our husbands, they shoulder many burdens and stresses, and they face many difficult and hard things. Let your home be a welcome refuge. Let it be a place where he can't wait to come home to. A smiling, cheerful wife can do wonders to soothe those stresses of church and work. Let him use you as a sounding board. That's an honor to me when he calls me in the office and say, tell me what you think about this. And then we go on to discuss something. And of course, temperaments will differ. My husband is one who needs time to process. If he comes home from a heavy minister's meetings, he doesn't always feel ready to talk. And I know personalities differ. But I have had to learn the hard way. Give him space. They will talk when they are ready. I remember, too, like when he was first studying, and even now sometimes, it's like, is this my husband? His mood changes. He's quiet. He's pensive. Maybe even melancholy. And it was felt threatening. Smile, love, and communicate. The man you know will return. My last point is support his vision. And this is so key to what your husband needs. Proverbs 31:25 says, strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. This gives me the picture of a woman that is spiritually, has strength spiritually, and honors her husband's convictions and vision. God saw in your husband a gift that could be used in the kingdom of God. God has given him a vision for his church and his family. You're his soulmate, the one he trusts, he loves, and adores. He also needs a teammate. Men feel very vulnerable when they sense in their wives resistance and pushback concerning the convictions and visions that they carry. So do we always need to think alike? That was one thing I struggled with through our marriage. Do I always need to think exactly like him? So when I asked Joel the question, he chuckled and he said, well, why would we need submission if we always thought alike? That was so freeing. But communicate. Be willing to hear each other's hearts. The decision is then up to us, how we respond to our husband's authority. How do you support your husband's vision for the church? Do we as women give any room for others to question whether we have impacted relational issues on the minister's bench? There are times when that temptation comes. Here's my chance to push my agenda. Our church has been updating our church standards, and that has been something I have had to be careful with. I know my weakness. It's my temptation to push my likes and dislikes. Or maybe even your friends' preferences. But remember, God has not ordained you. He has ordained your husband. When at Joel's bishop ordination, Paul Weaver prayed for me, and I will never forget that prayer. He prayed for me that I would stay in my place. It was what I needed. No, it's not wrong to suggest, but have the right motives and the proper attitudes. Your children should not only see your support of your husband's convictions, but also of the guidelines of the church you attend. More is definitely caught than taught. A minister's wife once gave me this advice after Joel was first ordained. Never tell your child to do thus and so because you are a preacher's child and the church said so. Rather, it should be that we do this because it is what Dad and I have agreed on. It is biblical conviction. Support your husband's convictions and teachings by going on with family devotions, even when daddy isn't there. Not only will it give security, it will show that mom stands behind dad's beliefs. Our example will also affect other women in the church. Many a member can be led astray when they see our inconsistencies. And I admit, it sometimes feels like you live in a glass house. And I don't really care for the feeling. But God has called us to be an example of the believers. By now, you may be feeling either inspired or just really overwhelmed. My heart's cry is not to make you feel overwhelmed. These are just ideas that have helped me. But Satan wants you to believe the lie that you are a failure. This is too big for you. That I'm not doing any great act of ministry. What I do is so insignificant. But what you can believe is that God chose you to be your husband's helper. Each act of kindness and respect, love and support you show to your pastor husband is being noticed and recorded in heaven. Don't try to put all these ideas into practice at once. Ask God to show you how I can better support my husband. There's a precious verse in Isaiah 30, verse 21, that says, "And thine ears shall hear a word behind you, saying, This is the way, walk ye in it, when ye turn to the right hand, and when ye turn to the left." That is God's promise to give Spirit-inspired direction. He will also give you the grace to fulfill your calling as a minister's wife. Ephesians 4, 7 is the promise, "But unto every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ." The monarch butterfly's transformation didn't happen overnight. We ourselves have gathered these worms, and it is so much fun to watch them. It's so amazing how they can go from this wiggly caterpillar into the chrysalis, into the hatching in 9 to 14 days. And a beautiful butterfly hatches. Our transformation won't happen overnight either. It's a work of progress. So in closing, remember that God uses imperfect instruments to complete his perfect plan. May you allow God to use you as an instrument to bless your husband as he sits in his gates. God bless you all.